Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 1, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, beginning with text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Suta uvacha anartan sa upavraja sridhan janapadam svakam tadmau daravaram tesham vishadam samayam iva. Suta Goswami said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Anartas, Dwarka, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. Purport. The beloved Lord was away from his own prosperous metropolis of Dwarka for a considerably long period because of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And thus all the inhabitants were overcome with melancholia due to separation. When the Lord descends on the earth, his eternal associates also come with him, just as the entourage of a king accompanies him. Such associates of the Lord are eternally liberated souls, and they cannot bear the separation of the Lord even for a moment because of intense affection for him. Thus the inhabitants of the city of Dwarka were in a mood of dejection and expected the arrival of the Lord at any moment. So the heralding sound of the auspicious conch shell was very encouraging. And apparently the sound pacified their dejection. They were still more aspirant to see the Lord amongst themselves, and all of them became alert to receive him in the befitting manner. These are the signs of spontaneous love of Godhead. Om Gyanati Murandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Jadvaita Gadadhar Sivasadevor Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama. So I was here a couple of weeks ago and we discussed the story of Grandfather Bhishma. So I want to again put the story in context, and I will be speaking at least tonight and tomorrow night, maybe on Saturday. I'm not sure if I'll go Saturday afternoon or Monday morning or Sunday morning. But as you remember, the Bhagavatam is being spoken in Naimisharanya. And when the sages of Naimisharanya hear from Suta Goswami that he will narrate to them the Srimad Bhagavatam, they begin to ask questions about its speakers and hearers. Basically means Srila Veda Vyasadeva, Shukadev Goswami, and Maharaj Prickett. So they began to ask questions about Maharaj Prickett. This section is answering the questions of Maharaj Prickett. Ram Roy Prabhu Ki Jai, Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Jai. So Suta Goswami, in this particular section, he began to narrate, the door can be shut, please. he began to narrate the story of Maharaj Prickett, which begins before his birth in the womb of his mother. So Suta Goswami begins to narrate some other stories. The first story that is the prelude to the birth of Maharaj Prickett is the son of Drona punished. The son of Drona is Ashvatthama, who first killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, was punished by Arjuna, and then took revenge on Arjuna by trying to kill his grandson, Maharaj Prickett, in the womb of Uttara. And therefore, as Suta Goswami is narrating about the history of Maharaj Prickett, he begins to describe Krishna, who is on the battle of Kurukshetra and protects Maharaj Prickett. And then after he narrates the story of Krishna protecting Maharaj Prickett, before he begins to tell the next part of Maharaj Prickett's history, because the rest of this canto is the story of Maharaj Prickett, see, he's still in the womb. So before he begins to narrate the story of Maharaj Prickett's birth, which will be the next chapter, he begins to discuss other topics contemporary to the time that Maharaj Prickett was in the womb, which is the beautiful story of Krishna attempting to leave Dwarka, attempting to leave Hastinapur. And he does it very, very gradually because of the great love and attachment of the devotees. So we went a part of this. First, he stopped by Uttara, Krishna, Pahi Pahi Mahayogam, Krishna protect me. And then we see Krishna responding to the utter dependence of his devotees. Because when one is dependent, he gets more care and attention. This is natural. Just like a small child gets more care and attention from his mother. So we see Krishna's natural reciprocation with his servants who take him as their exclusive shelter, and how Krishna is there and protecting. And then Krishna begins to leave again, and then Kunti comes, and we see her prayers and her mood of dependence on Krishna, that she'd rather have a calamitous situation where the external environment moves rapidly beyond one's control, so you have no other shelter than Krishna, because all your material abilities become nil by the movement of Kala or time. She'd rather be in that situation where she's dependent and therefore Krishna is there. And we see the mood of her prayers, and then Krishna is, it's very nice, and we're watching Krishna, we're watching the deep attachment of his devotees, which is the goal of life, Prema Pumartha Mahan. The goal of life is this deep, intensified, perfected affection for Krishna. Why is it the goal of life? Because that is what we are created for. We're created for Krishna's pleasure. We're parts and parcel. The part is meant for the satisfaction of the whole. So this is actually our purpose. Our purpose is to give Krishna pleasure by offering him love of Godhead. That's what we're made for. That's the perfection of life. So we're seeing this perfection of life because we're seeing this perfected love of the devotees. And the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to hear about Krishna and develop this love, and then hear about the devotees who love Krishna and aspire for that love, and therefore develop the desire to get that love within our own hearts. This is what the Bhagavatam is for. Hearing about Krishna and developing love of Godhead, and then hearing about his devotees who have love of Godhead and wanting that love of Godhead. If you desire a desire, you also have that desire. You see like some rock star or something, and you see that he has got the shakti, the opposite sex, and you say, I want that. Then you have it. You may not have the shakti, but you have the desire. So when you see bhakti or devotion, and you say, I want that. I want to please Krishna like that devotee is pleasing Krishna, then that's your bhakti. And therefore Prabhupada says that we advance by appreciation. When we actually begin to desire to have that kind of devotion. So we actually, we saw Krishna. And we see him and the love of his devotees, and then he tries to go again, but then he has to stay because of Subhadra. Why Subhadra? Because Subhadra lost her. Subhadra is Krishna's sister, and Subhadra lost her son. And therefore she's dependent. Especially Subhadra, and then Yudhisthira. Why? Because Yudhisthira is feeling this great dejection and depression at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra because so many people were killed to enthrone him. So he was also feeling. So we see how Krishna is control. This is the quality of prema bhakti. There's six characteristics of pure devotional service. There's two characteristics of pure devotional service executed at the level of prema bhakti. One is Sri Krishna Karshani. That type of devotion even can control and attract Krishna. So Krishna wants to go to Dwarka, but he cannot go to Dwarka. Because of the devotion of the residents, their dependence, their need. And therefore, then we see he stays, and then also we see the mind of Krishna as he wants to satisfy Bhishma Dev, and therefore he comes to see Bhishma Dev at the end of his life. And then again Krishna begins to leave. And in the previous chapter, we saw the love of the residents of Hastinapur for Krishna. How much they loved him. Even those who have never even saw Krishna. This is actually an amazing point. That these ladies, they never even personally saw Krishna. But because they were in Hastinapur, and Kurukshetra is just north of Hastinapur, and they heard of Krishna on the battlefield just by hearing, they develop so much love for him. And therefore they're on the rooftops, and when Krishna is walking by, they're crying but holding back their tears. Why are they holding back their tears? Because they feel it's inauspicious. When you're leaving someplace, don't have an argument with someone. It's inauspicious. I have this like kind of faith in omens. It's inauspicious, so they didn't want to cry when they're leaving. So they're holding back their tears. Not even they saw Krishna, but just they heard about Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and then every day in the house they were, you hear about Krishna, and he just spoke the Bhagavad Gita, and you see what his bodily features are, and he's so heroic, Oh yeah, and you remember Krishna in Vrindavan? Yeah, we heard about the gopis and how much he loved and Krishna's pastimes. I heard when he was young he killed so many demons. Just by Krishna Katha. So we see the love of all the residents, and now what will happen is, or what we're seeing now, is Krishna's entering into Dwarka. And we'll see the intense love of his devotees. And we'll also see why they have that love when they look on Krishna's beautiful form. So we're going to read about that today. So he's reaching the border of Dwarka, and he sounds his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So the inhabitants are feeling very depressed and dejected. Why? Because they're in separation from Krishna. But that dejection that they're feeling, here it's called vishadan. Vishadan means dejection. It's actually an expression of love. It's an emotion. It's an emotion of love. So it's not, externally it may seem like dejection, but it's actually the highest ecstasy. Because ecstasy is Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti is Krishna's pleasure potency. The essence of the pleasure potency is love of Godhead. And love of Godhead, that intense love, is composed of different emotions which churn it and perfect it. Rupa Goswami described, just like when you make sweet rice, you have rice, and you have milk, and you have sugar, you have some spice, cardamom. It has to be cooked at the right time. There has to be, you know, one part grain to every 16 parts milk. And the milk should actually be cooked first half. Then the rice is added and the sugar is added at the end. And then it becomes perfect. Not that you get rice floating in milk, or you get like white type of rice with cream, or it's a little burnt, or there's too much sugar, or too little sugar. But you get perfect sweet rice. So love for Krishna is like that. Krishna is a connoisseur. Connoisseur means one who has fine taste and he's not easily satisfied. So Krishna is a connoisseur of love. So all the ingredients of love must be there perfectly. So there's five. Sadhu asked me if I was going to sing any of those Vrindavan songs. I said, no, today I'm teaching them Ras Tattva. So now I'm fulfilling the desire. So there's actually five components. There's actually five emotions. This is technical because it's going to come in here. There's five emotions that make perfect love. I won't explain them all because I'm just giving general. But there's sthaibhav, there's vibhav, there's anubhav, there's sattvikabhav, and there's vyabhicharibhav. And each relationship with Krishna has their own emotions that make it perfect. I'll give you just one example. You'll get a brief understanding. For example, there's one emotion called anubhav. It means in a loving relationship, there must be the right actions. Actions are also emotions. For example, a mother, when she sees the child, the mother, out of love, blesses or orders the child. And she has so much love for the child that she blesses the child. She puts her hand on the child's head. And when she puts her hand on her child's head, or it doesn't have to be your child, but another child that's cute and you like that child, and you put the hand on the head, then if you have that maternal affection, let's say it's a lady, and you see Shiro, Mina, right? And you pat them on the head, and you see, you know, their cute faces, and then, you know, Shiro comes out with his, you know, Michael Jordan shirt, and you say, oh, how cute. And then you pat him on the head, right? Then the patting on the head will also increase that affection. So for maternal affection, you can order someone to pat him on the head. But now if the relationship you have is you're the servant or the son, then the actions in love are different. For example, if your guru comes, then you pay obeisances. And by paying obeisances, the guru bhakti, it will also increase by that activity. But if you see a guru and you pat him on the head, then that's called rasabhas. It's like it will the taste won't come fully, the affection won't come fully if you do the wrong activities. It's like the sweet rice. It's the milk's not cooked enough. The rice is not cooked enough. The sugar is added at the wrong time. So like this, this love is perfect and has these different emotions. So they're feeling, and even in all the relationships, there's also separation in this union, and there's different types of separation. For example, there's one type of separation where you never saw the person before. The separation that's experienced here is that they know them, now they're gone, and now they're coming back. So they were feeling vishada, and this is called a jabhachari bhav. What jabhachari bhav means is that there are 33 types of emotions that come from your primary mood of love of Krishna. For example, I'm going to use maternal affection. The mother has affection for the child, and then she sees the child and she becomes jubilant and happy. The happiness comes from her maternal affection, and then it comes back into the maternal affection and increases it. Just like a wave comes from the ocean and then goes back into the ocean to increase it. There's also fear. The child is in danger. Ah, my son. So the fear comes from the maternal affection, increase it, and then it goes back into increase it. There's 33 of these. It's so technical, it's so complicated. You can get an idea how scientific it is. So here, this is called vishadan. It means dejection. They're kind of depressed in love. But it's not like, it's ecstatic depression. Because why? Why is it ecstatic depression? Because they're dejected because they're separate from Krishna. But what's that doing to their love? It's increasing their love. So actually they're experiencing more ecstasy by their dejection because the dejection is increasing their love. This is really what's in the Bhagavatam. So their dejection is increasing their love. Therefore, even though their dejection, this fear and all these, it's actually ecstatic. It has an opposite effect. Just like, do you know that sometimes ice could burn? Do you know that? You have that sense? Ice can also burn. So, in the same sense, it has like an opposite quality. Although it's cold, it can also burn. So although it's sadness, it's also ecstasy. And Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And what is he enjoying? He's enjoying the love of his devotees. So this is all for Krishna's pleasure and the devotee's pleasure. And that's what these lila and pastimes mean. Krishna is exchanging with his own pleasure potency, which is in the heart of his devotees. So now what's happening is, I can't even describe all the different things that are here. But what's happening now is Krishna is blowing his conch shell. He's blowing his conch shell. And it's becoming pacified. Because Krishna is entering Dwarka. So the dejection was happiness, and the pacification of the dejection is also happiness. So now we should have like a bit of a mental image of Krishna entering Dwarka, and we should try to see his beauty. And that's what we're going to read today. The white and fat boweled conch shell being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. So the conch shell became reddened, and in the purport, Prabhupada describes very nicely how it just indicates how by the touch of Krishna, things develop their spiritual quality. So now by meeting Krishna, their devotion is even going to come out more. And Prabhupada says in the purport, by ardent love and devotional service to the Lord. In other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. See, but the devotees, like the residents of Dwarka, they're never separated from Krishna. They're never separated from Krishna. Because even when Krishna is not there, then Krishna is within their hearts and their thoughts. When you're in the mood of, when you meet someone, the object of your love is before you. And when you're separated from someone you love, then the person is in your heart. Krishna is non-different from his name, his form. Should probably move back up. His form, activities, qualities, and activities. So Krishna is there in his activities. Krishna, it's not material. So Krishna is always there in Vrindavan. Even externally, if he appears to leave in his manifest form, in his unmanifest, he's still there. And that's what Uddhava told the gopis as Krishna was gone for so many years and Krishna sent his closest associate outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava. And the message he gave to the gopis, Krishna said that I'm always there in my bhava expansion, in my devotion, in my mood. So they were always there with Krishna. But still, the analogy is given that by the touch of Krishna, things become spiritual and the spiritual existence is awakening. The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, began to run towards him fast, just to have a long desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all the devotees. In the purport here, Prabhupada also says another thing. The conch shell blowing and the sound heralding the arrival of Krishna is analogous to the sun, which comes on the horizon. Prabhupada says when the sun comes on the horizon, then you know the morning times. I'll read it. It's very nice. The sun. As much as we are put in a state of melancholy at night because of the absence of the sun. So the sun indicates like joy, happiness. Therefore, if someone's feeling depressed, it's good to be out in the early morning hours. So Krishna's presence is relieving their dejection. And here it is, they heard the sound, which threatens fear personified in the material world. Why does the sound threaten fear personified? Why? Because Krishna is the protector of his devotees. And the sound of Krishna and the holy name of Krishna is non-different than Krishna. So by the sound of Krishna, one is protected. The sound of Krishna, because fear personified is afraid of Krishna. He's afraid. So the sound threatens fear personified. So Krishna is coming into Dwarka. The citizens arrive before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one who by his own potency incessantly supplies others. These presentations were like the offering of a lamp to the sun. Yet the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardian and father. So we're going to see the citizens here have the mood of servitude towards Krishna. And what is the mood of servitude? Each different relationship with Krishna has a different flavor of love. Because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and he's enjoying the love of his devotees. But he's not enjoying just one flavor. There's not vanilla love of Godhead. There's so many flavors. Just think in your own lives, different flavors of love. There's a flavor of friendship. There may be a flavor of parental love. There may be a flavor of servitude. Anyway, in the material world, it's hard to get any flavors. If you get one flavor, you're lucky. But I'll give you an example. What's the mood? What's a mother's mood of love? The mother's mood of love is anugraha, or mercy. Without me, you will die. But the servant's love is different. The servant's love is, without you, I will die. So depending on the relationship with Krishna, there's a different flavor of love. So these are the servants of Krishna. So their mood is, Krishna, you are my protector. It says here, you're like the guardian, the father. So that's their mood, Krishna, the protector. He's so wonderful. And they're thinking, what are they thinking? They're remembering, yes, Krishna protected Maharaj Prickett in the womb. He protected Uttara. He protected Yudhisthira from his dejection. He was there with Kunti. They're thinking of Krishna in this term. Krishna is the protector. He's the guardian. And in that mood, there's all kinds of ecstatic signs, like this, what is that? Gad Gadaya. What is that verse from the Sikshastaka, Mahabhu? Go ahead. Nayanam Galad Asradaya. What's the rest of it? What? Say it loud. 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 Yeah, Gadgada means choked up voice in ecstasy. Sometimes the voice will become choked up. That's also an ecstatic symptom. In other words, it adds to the intense affection of the love. And this is really heightened emotional love. So it adds to the love. And also here it says harsha. Their happiness is also coming from their ecstatic relationship with Krishna. That's also there. And they're offering Krishna, but it says here, Siddha Goswami is describing the offerings to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient. How can you offer anything to God? God is Atmaram. It means there's nothing outside of Him. So what can He need? And what can you give Him? But you can give Him your love. It's described, the presentation is like offering a lamp to the sun or some water to the Ganges. When you worship the Ganges, you take the water in your hand. What you're offering is not the water, you're offering your love. When you're offering a lamp to the deity, you're offering your love, not just the wick. That's why you can do Manasa Puja. Because what you're really offering is your mind and your love. We need the physical objects to inspire that within our heart. But a very advanced devotee can worship within his mind. Because he's offering his love, he's offering his devotion. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta payachati. If you offer me with some love, some fruit, water, flower, I will accept it. So now get the image here. Krishna's coming and they're running towards Krishna. He's so beautiful. And they're offering him respective presentations. So this is the scene. Now the citizens will begin to offer their prayers to Krishna, who's their maintainer and protector. O Lord, you are worshipped by all the demigods like Brahma, the four sanas, and even the king of heavens. You're the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord. An inevitable time cannot exert its influence on you. So this is their mood of love. Prabhupada said the clear consciousness of the cognizant living being is God consciousness, in which one bows down to Him in all circumstances. O Creator of the universe, you are our mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master, and worshipable deity. By following in your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. For a servant, one of the Udipins, Udipins means, this is one of the ecstasies, is something that inspires, it's a stimulus for your love. So one great stimulus for a servant's love is thinking of his master's mercy. If we think of Prabhupada, the thing that will most stimulate our love for him, well, one of the things is seeing his kindness and mercy. Krishna's mother is not seeing his kindness and mercy. That doesn't inspire her love. What inspires her love is her kindness and mercy and Krishna's need. Therefore, she'll never see Krishna as God. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhanaprana. Krishna's mother, father, the Lord. So this is the mood of servitude. And they're thinking that by obeying you, the Lord becomes satisfied by our obedience, because then he's competent to bestow upon us all kinds of blessings. The Lord is powerful, and if he's satisfied by our obedience, if you're obedient to the master, in other words, when in a relationship with superior, if you're respectful, respect goes upwards and affection goes downwards. So if we're very obedient and devotionally obedient to Guru and Krishna, then they'll bestow their kindness and mercy. And Prabhupada, of course, in the purport says, therefore, they said, we become successful by following your injunctions. We become successful by following God's laws, his injunctions, by being obedient to him. Then he's kind to us. He bestows blessings. And the greatest blessing is that our relationship to Krishna can awaken within our heart. These are more of their prayers. Oh, it is our good luck that we have come again today under your protection, by your presence, for your lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven. They do not take Krishna cheaply. Now it is possible, manushyanam sahasreshu, kastid, yatati siddhaya, out of thousands and thousands of men, one may know Krishna. Now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances. So this is the mood of a servant. Krishna is very merciful and he's bestowing his affection and kindness. That's what you want from the superior. You want their kindness. We can now see your transcendental form, which is full of auspiciousness. So the Lord is rarely seen only by pure devotees. Prabhupada in the purport discusses when even Lord Brahma, you know the beginning of the Krishna book in the 10th canto, once the world was overburdened by an unnecessary defense force of kings, and they went to the milk ocean. It was difficult to see Krishna. So that person who is rarely seen is now in our presence. They're appreciating so much. When something is rare, you appreciate it more. Bhurijan made a nice point here. I don't know if it's from the commentaries, that all prayers, the resonance of Dwarka, they're so glorious. But everything glorifies Vrindavan. Just like in Vrindavan, they're saying, Krishna, they're saying here, you are my protector, Krishna. But in Vrindavan, the devotees feel that they're Krishna's protector. And there's a story when Krishna went out, he goes out to tend the cows every morning. And what happens? His mother goes out and says, you know, don't get hurt, did you bring your lunch? Then Nanda Maharaj goes out and says, you know, please be very, very careful. You know, Balaram, stay ahead, please protect him. Then his mother comes out, you know. Did you remember to bring your shoes? I don't know, you would stay, you know, please be careful. Don't forget the call. 10 times it's described in that Priya Bhagavata. 10 times they come out. Oh, lotus eyed Lord. Whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. So So you know that saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder? So this is the mood of separation. Or there's another saying, you know, when you're having a good time, time flies. So when you're in a state of depression, then time takes longer. So their mood is such that in the absence from Krishna, then it says absence is like a million years. And then they feel at that time, in the absence of Krishna, then everything has no value. And the example is given of the eyes. The eyes is only valuable in the presence of the sun. Without the sun, the eyes have no value. So that's the mood of the devotee, Govinda Vrahaneve. You know, the world becomes vacant in your absence. This is depression. When someone loses someone they love, then the whole world has no meaning. When the world has meaning, there's variety, there's color, there's personality, there's form. When you become depressed, it's all black. You know? It all, your favorite food, your good food, bad food, entertainment, no entertainment, you know, mother, father, here, not, it doesn't matter. So this is, everyone's laughing like they're always depressed all the time. I'm not speaking this from realization because I never get depressed. Manic, but not depressed. I never get depressed. Somehow or other, that's my fortune. And misfortune, because anything material has a good and bad side. Actually, there's no good or bad fortune. Everything is to make us come closer to Krishna. So the world becomes vacant. So their mood is without Krishna, everything is vacant. Nothing has any meaning. Nothing has any use. Nothing has any value. They're feeling like this. Oh, Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face. Whose smile vanquishes all our suffering? How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. So Krishna's hearing these speeches, and they cannot exist without his presence. So why can't you tolerate separation? The Prabhupada gives a very nice analogy to help us understand. It says, just like the sun and the sun rays are separated by the clouds, but it's artificial. It's artificial. They're actually one. So our separation from Krishna is actually artificial. And therefore it's hard to tolerate that separation. Just like the hand is part of the body. The hand separated from the body, it has no value. If the hand's not used to serve the body, it has no value. So we're part and parcel of Krishna, separated from him, we have no value. There's no use. And therefore, Krishna consciousness gives us meaning and value. It removes the illusion that we're separated from Krishna becomes removed. We have to take the Krishna consciousness. We have to focus our mind on Krishna. We have to chant his glories. We have to serve the devotees. This is what our purpose is. We should not neglect these things. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vrishni. Bhoja, Madhu, Dasarha, Arha, Kukura, Andaka, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. Now, Sutta Goswami now is going to start to describe Dwarka Puri. Class will be up 15-20 minutes more. He's going to start explaining Krishna's dham, his holy abode. When the presence of God means everything is wonderful. So we'll see what the abode of Krishna is like. The city of Dwarkapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. So this is the city of Dwarkapuri. Prabhupada said there's no mentions of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gift is still there, even in the hearts of modern civilized man. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there are such naturally beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water. But they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens. So this is the dham. It's so beautiful and so rich. And it has a purpose. The environment has a purpose. Because the purpose of the spiritual world is these loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees so he can enjoy love. So the atmosphere is very much connected to your sentiments. So Krishna's holy abode, by the potency of yoga maya, perfectly arranges the environment to nourish the right? Particular atmosphere. It's a romantic atmosphere. So it supports their feelings. Right? You can imagine like another atmosphere wouldn't be suitable. You know, if the boy and the girl are meeting together and the, you know, there's an atmosphere and then the music comes up, you know, they finally get together and meet and the music comes up. Samsaradava nalalita loka Tanaya Karunya Gananatva. You put on the wrong tape. Now I have to remember my guru and I can't enjoy. So, the atmosphere is so important. So there's an aesthetic atmosphere in the dham and it's very beautiful. But also Prabhupada's saying, even for our own spiritual life, the atmosphere is also important. The aesthetic is also important to our consciousness. And therefore, in a proper society, development of factories and mills is called ugra karma or pungent activities. And such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of the human being in society to form a dungeon of demons. Prabhupada's explaining this. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks, reservoirs of water with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers, and cows giving sufficient milk and butter are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories, and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class, and consequently there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization. The city gateway, the household doors, and festoon arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. The highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. scented water prepared from distilling flowers like rose and kira were requisitioned to wet the roads. It's very beautiful. Even in India, when you have these festivals, I remember when the Russian devotees first came, the first time they came into India. You know, because when I was in Europe, I remember I went to East Germany once, and riding from West Germany to East Germany was like going from a light, it was like going from color TV to black and white. So these communist countries that were devoid of God were so dull. When the Russians first came and they first had a big feast in Bengal, one of them took a sweet papaya and he looked at the person next to him, this Western devotee, and he said, "A fruit?" And they said, "Yes." And he bit into it and he began to cry. So when they came, you know, we were spraying them. We greeted them on Bhaktivedanta Swami Mug. We sprayed them with rose water and this kirtan. And when they came out of Prabhupada Samadhi down the stairs, we had tons of rose petals. They were throwing from the sky and they were like falling on their faces. And the Vedic system, Prabhupada said, in each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruit, sugar cane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. Purport, the process of reception according to Vedic rites is not at all dry. The reception was made not simply to decorate the roads, but by worshiping the Lord. See, it's so beautiful. It wasn't dry. The culture is so rich. We know how to, there's a connection between the material and spiritual. Just like if you live in a society where people know the Shastra, they hear about these stories, and therefore they know how to relate properly to each other, then one is feeling very satisfied in heart. Because people know how to act as friends, they know how to act towards superiors. It's very nice. There are grandfathers in the community that are reverent, and you can offer them respect. So all the proper natural sentiments come out of the heart and condition the heart in the proper way for Krishna Bhakti. A very beautiful description. On hearing that the most dear Krishna was approaching Dwarka Dham, magnanimous Vasudeva, Akura, Ugrasena, Balaram, the superhumanly powerful Pradyumna, Charadeshna, and Samba, the son of Jambavati, all extremely happy, abandoning, resting, sitting, and dining. So all the great personalities came to greet Krishna. They hastened toward the Lord on chariots, with Brahmins bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded. And the Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. Purport, the Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. The auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flour, incense, decorated elephants, and the qualified Brahmins reciting verses from the Vedic literature. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the receiver. So this is Vedic society. Vedic society means is that you express respect and then affection comes. And what is the affection of a saintly person? It's his blessings, it's his knowledge, it's his realizations, what he knows. The Vedic society, we create such an atmosphere that when the guest would come, he would just pour forth all his realizations, knowledge. The culture, the atmosphere was there to make the culture means atmosphere that allows something to grow. So the Vedic culture was meant to allow devotion and religiosity and dharma to grow. It was a proper culture. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. Prabhupada says, we may not even We may not hate even the prostitutes if they're devotees of the Lord. Everyone in society, they become purified if they become a devotee of the Lord. And there's no material, Prabhupada says, I think, devotional service of the Lord is uncheckable in all circumstances. Prabhupada quoted from 932 Bhagavad Gita, Mamhi ya vipassita yepisyo papayonia. He said, Prabhupada said, O son of Pratha, even the lower born chandalas and those who are born in the family of unbelievers and even the prostitutes shall attain perfection if they take shelter of unalloyed devotion. Prabhupada also mentions how they are necessary in society, the prostitutes. The idea is there's a class of men. Similarly, men who are not satisfied at home require such concessions. If there's no prostitution, then such low-class men will induce others into prostitution. So even the prostitutes had some function to help society keep it pure. Of course, there's the story Prabhupada tells about Chintamani. Bilvamangala Thakur was so attached to a prostitute that when his father's funeral ceremony, he was telling the priest, hurry up, hurry up. Can you light the body? Get rid of it. I gotta go. And then he went to see the prostitute after so much difficulty. And then Krishna spoke to her through the prostitute. There's the principle of guru and there's the form of guru. But the principle of guru is there through the prostitute. And in a sense, if you had so much determination for God, you'd become a great devotee. And he remembered that. Expert dramatists, artists, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists and learned speakers all gave their respected contributions, being inspired by the superhuman pastimes of the Lord. Thus they proceeded on and on. So Prabhupada said, entertainers are needed in society for spiritual enlightenment. Because people need that culture. So through that type of culture, it would all be about God. And in the villages, every night they would hear the Ramayana. So interesting, the pastimes, dramas. This is why this rural community, not rural, but a community of devotees, agrarian base, so that people don't have to work so hard, then that supports artists, people can be artists for Krishna. See, today's society, it's so difficult. I describe sometimes when you want to be a spiritual guide to someone in society today, you personally got to recreate the Van Ashram system for each individual disciple. Where in the Vedic society, it went on automatically. Who the girl would marry to, and it would be compatible, it would be the same class, same family. What the man's occupation was already lined up. The gurus and the teachers were there. And now you got to recreate everything. And the culture was there. Prabhupada even talked about genealogists. You can find your family line. They were trained. Even 100 years ago in India, all dramatic performances were centered around the superhuman activities of the Supreme Lord. So nice. Just like now, we're hearing Krishna Katha. It's entertaining. Right? But we don't live together. See, sometimes I see my students or disciples once a year or twice a year or three times. But the Vedic society is that all the functions were there. And so it can all be around God and you become naturally enlightened. Lord Krishna, the personality of God, had approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. So it says, Prabhupada says, yata vidhi. So this, just as it behooves, is significant. Krishna reciprocated. This is what a person means. God is a person. He reciprocates. Person means a great person reciprocates in relationships. Real relationship means is that you have love and affection for the person who you have some relationship with, which means you try to satisfy them. But you don't satisfy everyone the same way. If you have a relationship with a child, you satisfy them by giving protection. If you have a relationship with the parents, you satisfy them by taking shelter. If you have the relationship with a friend, it's a different thing. So Krishna reciprocates perfectly. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness. And a sample of such reciprocation exhibited here with his different welcomers. He reciprocates our relationship and also our sincerity perfectly. The Almighty Lord greeted everyone present by bowing his head, exchanging greetings, embracing, shaking hands, looking and smiling, giving assurances and awarding benedictions, even to the lowest rank. So he reciprocated properly. You bow down to the superiors. You offer benediction to the juniors, subordinates. And the wonderful thing here is that even though living entities are graded differently according to the modes of nature, Krishna is affectionate to all of them. According to their position, no one is barred from the devotional service of the Lord. Then the Lord personally entered the city, accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid Brahmins with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praised the glories of the Lord. So this is interesting. There was a social welfare system when you were a Brahmin. You didn't have to get health insurance and social security because you were taken care of. And how are you taken care of? When you're older, even though you're invalid or Brahmin or elderly relative, the invalid Brahmins, the kings would employ them to chant prayers. Om Tad Vishnu Parama. You know, they would offer these beautiful prayers. And there would be reciprocation in society. We have a horrible civilization and a horrible society. We have to just make the best of a bad bargain. But hopefully, by the mercy of Prabhupada, eventually we can have Vaishnav communities. Not where everyone talks about everyone else, but where everyone supports everyone else, and there's the proper authority, because there's respected teachers and Brahmins who can keep the principles and the objectives proper. Now, the next few verses, the 3 or 4 verses, you're going to start seeing the beauty of Krishna through the eyes of his devotees. When Lord Krishna passed over the public roads, all the ladies from the respectable families of Dwarka went up to the roofs of their palaces just to have a look at the Lord. They considered this to be the greatest festival. Mahotsav is festival. Maha Utsav. So this is the festival. The festival is seeing Krishna's beauty. That's the greatest festival. And they were seeing Krishna's beauty. And Prabhupada said, especially, this is still followed by devout ladies in terms of the deities. If you go to Jaipur and you see the whole town goes to worship these deities in the village, the whole town worships these deities. I mean, in the city, Govinda Dev. And mostly the ladies. But this is the festival, just like here. What is our festival? It's based on Radha Gopi Vallabha. That's the festival. Seeing Krishna's beauty. And everyone's so opulent here, we can also see that. And today, we can't see Krishna personally, we see the Archa Vigraha, Krishna manifest. Prabhupada also says, female respectability is preserved more elegantly by keeping women separate from the man. The sexes should not mix unrestrictedly. So this was the Vedic culture here. So they're on the roofs. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. This is the nature of Krishna, is that you're never satiated by seeing him. You feel fully satisfied by never satiated. See, when in the material world, you meet someone, it's ecstatic. The next time, a little less ecstatic. The next time, less ecstatic. You see something, you enjoy something, it becomes less and less. You become satiated. So it's always, the first time you see something is always best. But when you see Krishna, it's always the first time. The nature of prema bhakti is apurvam. Apurva, it means unprecedented. I've never seen it before. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I described this before. Radharani sees Krishna, and she becomes so happy. And when Krishna sees Radharani become happy, he becomes happy. And when Krishna becomes happy, he becomes more beautiful. Because when you smile, you're more beautiful. And Radharani, seeing Krishna more beautiful, she becomes more ecstatic and more happy, and she becomes more beautiful. And Krishna sees Radharani, he becomes happy. The transcendental competition goes on. Therefore, it says it's newer and newer. Just like the sages of Naimisharanya, when they were hearing Krishna Katha, they said, Vayam Nutu Vitripyama Uttama Shloka Vartate Vishrinvatam Rasaganam Pade Pade Swade. So they never get tired. You never get tired. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental beauty of the Lord, because they are always manifestation of newer and newer beauties. The Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for the eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any object except his lordship. So the Lord is the abode of beauty. He's the abode of fulfilling all desires. Whatever you want, you can be found in the Lord's form. For example, fortune, the goddess of fortune, can be seen automatically if you're attracted by the bodily features of the Lord. So his body is the goddess of fortune. His chest is the abode of the God. You want wealth. Krishna Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Viksha Chintamani Dham is abode. Beauty, the face of the Lord is the embodiment of beauty. What they call beautiful nature is but a smile, and what they call the sweet songs of birds are but specimens of the whispering voice of the Lord. You want protection? They're administrative demigods in charge of the protection, the Lord's arms are the resting place for the administrative demigods who offer protection. And if you want refuge, his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk about anything except Krishna. Rupa Goswami, the great acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, sung a song about the lotus honey, comparing him to the bee. Oh, my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly, therefore, give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the reservoir, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such. You are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet. But because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom, and therefore I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please therefore let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. Now, follow the image. Krishna's walking in, the Brahmins are chanting, everything so beautiful. Scented water, the elephants. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwarka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles, and a shower of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud was surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. So the Lord's you was like a monsoon cloud, so dark. And the umbrella was like the sun, and the chamara was like the moon, and the yellow garment was like the rainbow. So all these activities of firmament are impossible factors, Prabhupada says. Simultaneously, they cannot exist, but they can be adjusted by comparison. The adjustment is possible when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. He has inconceivable potency, and therefore his beauty is inconceivably described. You can describe it by natural firmaments, but in an inconceivable way, the sun and the moon. So it's described here, but the situation created at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides a description of natural phenomena. And only that natural phenomena when it's inconceivably. So now we're following Krishna. And this is actually the process to develop love of Godhead. You have to hear about Krishna's form, his qualities, his message, which is non-different from him. Now we eventually have to create the Krishna conscious society. So the Krishna Katha goes on like this in every center, every day, every morning, every evening. And thereafter, after 20, 30 years in the morning, we're just hearing constantly, remembering the pastimes of Krishna. Are there any questions? So we will meet again tomorrow to hear the second half of this, where we'll not only see Krishna's beautiful form, but we'll see the ecstatic love of his devotees. Okay, we'll end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.